Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, back together. Home improvement, so many things to talk about. We are live and lively. Phone lines wide open for you. Getting the temperature up. Sunshine, did you hear Brian Kelly? 60 degrees. Happy New Year. It's January. Santa just left. Holy smokes. I love it. I love it. Did I mention I like warm? Hey, it is Scott Mosby here with you. I have a guest, Josh Dunlap, in the studio today. We are with you for 2 hours. We're going to talk about everything around your house, your home, your comfort, your sanity, perhaps, and your project for all you do-it-yourself folks that really trying to figure out how to take care of that basement, the bathroom remodel, putting new count, whatever it might be. I've walked those miles, and Josh can help you with how and what and where to look for these things. Joshua, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
You managed to be here at 60 degrees on a sunshiny Saturday.
It's really hard, but yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate your help on this wonderful Saturday morning. Josh Dunlap, Mosby Building Arts, Scott Mosby here from KMOX. We are live and lively at your service. 50,000 watts, 2 full hours, 10 phone lines. Any topic you want to talk about, 314-436-7900, 436-7900. Toll-free 800-925-1120. So much to think about. Well, it's wonderful. I want to talk about screens, windows, window locks, caulking, ceiling, all of that stuff, because today, tomorrow, probably even maybe a little into Monday, you may choose to air out the house. Yeah, we're all closed up with the winter, and indoor air quality, whether you realize it or not, even the very clothes that you buy are oftentimes made of plastics and such. The off-gassing or out-gassing, as it's called, puts various things in the air that affects the indoor air quality. So keep in mind that's important. And then just generally keeping the house closed up, the dust, change that furnace filter, make sure that the locks on your windows operate successfully, because when you lock them up in the winter, if there's an occurrence like a fire, it's really important you, your family, and the occupants and guests get out through the doors and the windows. So those locks and operating sashes is all very important around your logical home. How about the holidays? Happy New Year to all. Josh, any wild things that, the Dunlap family celebrated for the New Year?
Oh, not really. We try to keep it a little low-key. The folks in our neighborhood had quite a shindig going on. There's quite a lot of noise.
Oh.
We went out on the front porch and just banged our pots and pans as tradition holds. broke a couple spoons, but that's all right.
Oh.
But yeah, we had a grand old time. We had movies on and had hors d'oeuvres out and then had some friends over, and it was perfect.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Oh, my. Well, so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how did it work around your home? Anything that you notice as far as entertaining or, Josh, you've got kids and family and the whole thing, and you speak with people throughout the St. Louis metropolitan area, and frankly, as far as this radio station signal carries, what are you seeing?
Oh, yeah. You mentioned indoor air quality and stuff like that, and it's really interesting how you can kind of forget that your home is a system, and you got your HVAC system working to keep you comfortable. And when you get 5, 6, 7 people over who aren't normally there, your HVAC system might not perform exactly right. So it's like you're sitting around watching TV, and all of a sudden it's like, man, it's really hot in here. It's really stuffy in here. And you realize, like, you know what? We've got more people in the house. There's more BTUs. There's more moisture. There's all these things going into changing the dynamic of the house. And it's really good to have an HVAC system that can adapt to that.
Yeah, HVAC, explain what that is.
Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So it's basically the central breathing system of your house, what's moving the air around, keeping you comfortable, managing the moisture. It's a critical component to managing comfort, health, and safety in your home.
Yeah, if you don't know how important it is, try not breathing yourself for a while. See how it works
exactly.
out.
Exactly, exactly. It's the lungs of the house, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Which then recycles into the lungs of us as we occupy and cook or, you know, paint, whatever the off-gassing is from, you know, clothing, fabrics, carpets, flooring, finishes. You know, so much.
Oh, yeah. And with what we bring into the house, sometimes we get into a situation where the air inside the house may be worse than the air that's outside. So airing out and being mindful of ventilation and stuff like that to make sure that whatever's floating around in the air is being managed in a way that's, you know, keeping you and your family safe.
And it's not just you hockey families. Yeah, I mean, you know, that hockey, everybody has that issue. So whether it's sneakers or workout clothes, whatever it is, that's the simple stuff. What Josh and I are talking about is a little bit more toxic, if you will, when you don't change the air.
It's
Yeah.
covers a wide gamut.
Yeah, yeah. With phone lines, 314-436-7900, 436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. I say we get going here. Josh, you want to get on the phones away and see what's
let's
cooking?
Jump in.
Right on. Let's see what Tom has to do. Hey, Tom, good morning. Welcome. Thanks for getting us started here, my friend.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a stainless steel sink in my kitchen under a granite countertop. It was installed 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's held on with metal clips. And obviously over the years, the caulking has broken down and been replaced and that. But some of the clips have rusted and now broken. Mm-hmm. And the sink is starting to sag from the granite.
Okay.
I called a couple plumbers and they said, that's not a plumbing problem. We're, you know, call somebody else. So I'm trying to find out who would fix something. Who would come and... Because I understand that it can even be epoxied on or something to hold the sink in, but
yeah.
I can't get to some of the clips. The cabinets are way too close to get in there, and I'm getting older to where I'd rather just have somebody do it right, you know.
So
who would do that?
I'm glad you mentioned not wanting to take it on yourself, because my first suggestion was it is actually something that you can take on yourself. They sell kits at the box stores, and it is.
Well, I've seen the clips, and I found actually, I think Lowe's has exactly the same ones. But the one that broke away is in the front of the sink, and the cabinet front there is so close to where I can't even find the screw where it broke off from.
Yeah, it can get pretty crowded in there.
Yeah, so...
My suggestion would be, you know, with a granite top, look at a granite top supplier. You know, those folks, you know, their installers take care of that stuff all the time, and you could probably give them a call, and they can set up a service call. And really, it should only take maybe an hour or two. It's going to take longer for the epoxy to set than it's going to take for them to get the sink cinched back up to the where it needs to, and they can repair that seal and everything.
So a granite installer or a granite any granite company.
Most granite companies, if they also have, they many times they'll have an installation side. You know, a few come to mind, you know, where they have a team that goes out and does installations after you buy in their showroom. So, but there are some who are just fabricators who don't necessarily do installation. But you make a couple phone calls, you know, some of the, you know, take a look in the Yellow Pages or online, and you should be able to find a couple resources pretty quickly that have an installation crew that can come out and take care of it.
Okay, so granite installation more is what I'm looking for.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Tom, do you know who put in your top?
Yeah, the company that did the top is no longer in business.
Okay.
You know, it's like I said, it was 20 something years ago and everything. So
okay.
But you know, cuz that was my first thought, but it's like okay, they're gone. So you know, I even went back to the company who did the cabinets and stuff like that, and they've got now they sub everything out, and I said, well, who would I call? And they go, well, we really don't know. So they weren't much help. So
I'll tell you what, call Mosby. We'll give you a referral of solid surface tops and people that will install it. So, you know, folks that put in our granite and, you know, marbles and all
okay.
the, And that's, you know, that we keep a pretty good database for that we're willing to share with people because we buy this service all the time.
Sure. Okay. So just call your offices on Monday?
Yep. 314-909-1800. 314-909-1800.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your help, and have a happy new year.
Thanks, Tom. So,
thank you,
brother.
Bye-bye.
Josh, you're not going to get underneath that sink and help Tom out with that bracket?
You bet. I'll give us a call. I'll set up the appointment.
You have to understand, I'm a small guy, and Josh is three times the man I am.
I've spent my time crammed underneath the kitchen sink, you know, doing installations and things like that. I've been under there, and I kind of, like Tom, I generally don't really want to get under there much anymore. It's uncomfortable, it's awkward, and you got to kind of get your arm to work in three different directions, and it's a challenge, but some of these guys do it all the time, and they're more accustomed to it than I am.
I get the sense with your youth and size, Josh, you just go over, grab the sink, and rip it out of the hole on the granite. It's like, I don't think that's one of the choices I might have in my repertoire of services.
I just grab hold of the whole countertop and just pick it up.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. Okay. Tom, I hope we've helped you there. We're going to take a short pause, come back for more on KMOX At Your Service. Josh Dunlap, Scott Mosby, we're happy to be here, and it's almost 60 degrees.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
Oh, yes, indeed. We are here with you. 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Josh Dunlap, Scott Mosby, at your service. Next up, let's talk to my friend Mark on line one. Hey, Mark, Scott and Josh here. How can we help you, brother?
I built a new home 2 years ago, and I've got a pretty nice garage on the side. It's 1,500 square feet. We had it blown insulated, and that was in September. So that year, as soon as it got cold, I noticed that the garage doors were sweating terribly. And, I mean, darn near you opened it up, and it would pour down rain. So thinking that wasn't good, I bought a dehumidifier, which really works well. So it runs 24 hours a day all during the winter, as soon as it gets cool in the fall, and it can empty about 6 gallons a day. So I take this little 12-gallon barrel, and every other day I empty it out, and you can run it out to the outside with a hose, but it just doesn't seem to work. So what kind of obviously I have it well insulated. Now I also have a freezer and a refrigerator in there, which something's causing all this humidity. Again, being a new home, my exterior door into the laundry room, I can't imagine it's throwing that kind of humidity out into that garage. But from October through March or February, when it's probably below 50 degrees or 40 degrees normally, it just, if I turn it off, everything will sweat up. If I run it works. It's just, what kind of a trade can help me where I don't have to keep doing this with this dehumidifier?
Did you insulate the walls on this too, Mark?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we blew in everything. I mean, it's well insulated.
Okay, well, you're not experiencing any condensation on those walls. It's only on the really cold surfaces, concrete floor, garage doors.
It's really just on the concrete, on the garage doors and a little bit on the side window in the front on the brick side, but yeah.
The one thing I would offer is take a plastic test. Do you know if you put a plastic vapor retarder underneath that concrete slab?
Oh, I would say I did not. And since it was built on rock, we had to put a lot of 2-inch rock underneath everything. So at first I thought maybe there's a lot of water underneath the house and eventually it would stop. But 2 years later, it's not stopping.
Well, it's just a garage. I mean, frankly, you're describing my garage. I do have a really nice insulated overhead garage door, because I wanted to complete that insulated envelope. All that means is that when it gets warm and humid, the concrete condenses because it's the coldest surface. And, you know, today, even as beautiful as it is, it's still a humid day in the Midwest.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong. You just open these big doors and let in all the moisture in big gulps. And, you know, by having an insulated garage, you are semi-conditioning that. And I think your freezer and fridge are actually working for you to raise that temp. But as soon as you open the garage door, you're changing all the air and losing that heat. So I don't know that there's anything wrong, frankly.
Well, but I mean, as far what I'm trying to do is not have to run this dehumidifier. I mean, with a fan on the side of the wall where they were switching the cooler air, or I mean, I don't want to crack my garage door. I don't need mice and everything coming in. It just seems like the air is 60 degrees always in this garage, and when it's 40 degrees outside, you're just going to get this high humidity in the garage, and it's going to, if you don't run the dehumidifier, it just drenches the garage door. So who would I talk to? What kind of person would, I'm looking for a permanent fix versus this dehumidifier running all day long, well, 24 hours a day.
3 points here, Mark. Number one, stop the moisture. You're not going to stop the moisture, so just mark off number one. I mean, you can't. It's the Midwest, and even on a cold day, the relative humidity is relatively high. And number two, raise the temperature. Number three, lower the humidity. So, well, you're not going to lower the humidity. And as long as you've got a dew point where, you know, that intersection where the fog happens outdoors, you know, you wind up with cold air and warm soil. And then we have fog here in the Midwest. My point is that as long as you're opening those garage doors, you need to raise the temperature, which raises the dew point up, you know, so that it gets warm enough. And then you effectively drive the humidity down to some extent. But if you change or move the air, you know, maybe put a fan in there. I've seen ceiling fans, you know, that actually move the air past the dehumidifier. But I think you're still going to get 6 gallons of water out of
it.
Josh, you have any ideas?
Mark, did you say that there was heating and cooling in the garage? Like, you did all the insulation, you kind of made it.
No,
like
there is no heating and cooling in the garage. No.
I think airflow is going to be probably your biggest concern. Typically in a house, you might see exactly the same kind of moisture coming in through the basement slab, through the foundation walls, things like that. But the heating and cooling system, circulating the air through the house, passing it over a coil, which pulls that moisture out, does your dehumidification.
Which is what the dehumidifier is.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
And without having that in the garage, I think the dehumidifier is your solution. To make a passively stable system, I think you'd have to have, you know, really good insulation underneath your concrete slab and a really good vapor barrier to kind of make sure you have a continuous envelope of moisture protection around the entire space. And without that, you got moisture come up through the slab that's just enough to start accumulating.
Which is common. Most slabs don't have vapor barriers in the garage, so there's nothing wrong with the house you built in the garage. It just is.
Yeah. So I'm 6 gallons a day through all the cold weather, and there's, like I said, I could stick the hose to pour outside, but then when it freezes overnight, then I've got that problem to worry about. So.
Yeah. I, on a downhill slope, I've done this before on a previous house. I actually buried a condensate line that went down the hill, but that was about 20 inches deep so that I could get rid of that water. But every now and again, when it gets really cold, I'd have to go out in the backyard and kick the icicles off the daylight outlet of that pipe when it came up to the surface, you know, regardless of how much downhill it was.
You said this garage was attached or detached?
It is attached.
Well, if there's a chance to possibly you give a supply run out from your heating and cooling system and maybe even a return, just getting some air moving through the space can help enormously.
Yeah.
So the easiest would be put a ceiling fan in there just to move air.
Yes.
But the exhaust of that dehumidifier actually blows quite nicely, too. It's just that it's always running, and I have to, every other day, empty this little barrel. So.
Yeah. I you know what I would do is I would probably invest in a better way to drain that dehumidifier, because I think you've got this pretty well dialed. I think you've done everything you can other than conveniently exhaust your water.
Correct.
So that's where I would invest my efforts on how maybe it's a condensate pump in your dehumidifier or a condensate pump outside the dehumidifier, like for a furnace or air conditioner, something like that. I don't think it's broken. I just think it's St. Louis.
Yeah, either any way to do that, if I either go out a garage door or out a wall or dig up the garage floor to get it to where it stays warm enough that it'll drain once it hits that outside air like you talked about.
Right.
Well, with a little condensate pump, you really only have to run maybe a 3/4-inch line, and if you can get that to go into the basement and then to a floor drain or somewhere else, that might, you know, keep it inside the house. You don't have to worry about it freezing. That might be a possibility.
It'll go the other way, yeah. Well, everything's finished on the inside wall of that side in the basement. I mean, I've got drywall ceilings, and
Yeah.
I guess I'm just going to have to live with it.
Mark, I think you are on the path of solving it. It just, you don't like the consequence of all this water.
I mean, it isn't that big a deal. You plug it in, you let it run for those so many months, it handles it nicely. The garage doors are dry. The windows aren't fogged up or you know, water on it. It's just, it's a pain to unload this thing every other day.
Oh, man, so. You spike the football, do the happy dance, and unload your condensate, man. You know, you got it going on.
All right, thanks.
Okay, take care, Mark.
All right, see you. Bye.
Bye now. Josh and Scott at your service here on University of Cape. Come on in. There's a few more seats in the back of the classroom, and every now and again, we wind up with the students being the instructors right here on CamWax.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, we're going to rev up the old phone lines here and see if we can get going with my friend Melanie. Hey, Melanie, good morning. Welcome to CamWax. How can we help?
Good morning. I live in a 1950s brick ranch where, at the time, builders frequently put in flower boxes.
Yes.
That, you know, up against the front window and the brick.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've removed the flower box, and only to find out that behind it, which was a smart thing to do, the builder put epoxy or some kind of waterproofing, maybe it's just tar material, up against the brick that would have been covered up, you know, by the flower box. Well, now that the flower box is removed, I'm looking for a way to get that epoxy off.
Well, it's probably tar, asphalt, like a hot mop or a foundation waterproofer, and it's nigh on to impossible.
Oh no!
I don't have a good. You know, Josh and I are sitting here smiling at each other, like, "Well, you going to tell her?" Like, "Well, you going to tell her?" Like, "Are you gonna, no you." Melanie, I just don't have a real good answer for you. I've tried this. I've walked this nightmarish path. Scrape it off. The best thing I can say is physically get as much of it off and then sandblast what's there. The problem is the very sandblasting itself changes the texture of where you sandblast, unless you sandblast the whole front of the house, which it'll look less attractive after you do that. So,
right. Well, and then to make matters worse, I mean, the brick is not smooth.
Yeah.
You know, but so I understand that the veneer will end up being different. But again, on, you know, I'll be putting furniture out there, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically you're saying to sandblast it off, but that it will give my brick a different finish.
Or put surface over it. Put some sort of a, you know, beaded paneling look or something. But then now when you start making it an attractive feature, you know, now you have to carry that throughout that porch, that patio. You know, if you doll up this point, you have to doll up that point too.
Right. Well, it would mean the patio itself is about 10 feet long. So,
okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have answered. Who would I get to sandblast this off?
Oh, Josh, any ideas? I mean, for a small job like that, it's, you know, like you're bringing a nuclear bomb to a, you know, toothpick fight.
There are sandblasting companies, quite a few of them actually all over town, and they have varying degrees. A lot of them have portable units where they come. It's a truck setups because they are servicing something, you know, like equipment or even exactly what you're dealing with. You know, stripping off, you know, graffiti and things like that. So I did the Yellow Pages for Google's sandblasting in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for the information. It wasn't the answer I was looking for, but it's the way it is. So thank you very much, Scott.
Well, the answer is don't fight that battle because you'll lose. So I hope we saved you about 3 days and 4 months of anguish.
Right, right. Okay, yes, it sounds like you have. So thanks a lot for the information.
All right,
bye now.
Bye. Next up, let's see what's cooking with my buddy John. Hey, John, Josh and Scott here at your service.
Hey, Scott. Hey, I lived in the 1970s, so I have no internet connection or whatsoever.
Okay.
I want to buy my son-in-law and daughter-in-law a Ring doorbell.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend of mine Google it and look it up, and she left me more confused and after she was done reading the stuff than I know. But the Ring doorbells, that where it has the audio and the visual, and where you can have that go to your PC or your smartphone,
mm-hmm.
What do I do? Can I install that myself? And there's apparently a low end and a high end of these things, and I don't know where to go.
Well, number one, just in general consumer values in my world, if you're going to a powerful something, make sure you go to the high end. So if you're going to play with power, make sure you get as much quality in it as you can. So I wouldn't mess around with low end anything, especially on electronics when it gets to security. And, you know, the Ring is marketed directly to the consumer, so the consumer can install that. And now I keep in mind, when you have a camera and audio, that image and audio goes somewhere. And I would invest in finding out where Ring central office that model, because some companies offshore this to the point that you may have somebody in Turkey watching your image or potentially taking those signals as it comes through their server and back out to your home or whatever. So,
Oh, really?
This is powerful, and these appliances are fabulously convenient and effective. But I know on the Ring situation that before they were popular, the response time, you know, you might have somebody knock on the door and 5 seconds later you get, you know, an image on your phone. The busier it gets, the busier those servers, just like your internet traffic, you wind up with, when you had 1 million people on it, it was 5 seconds. Now you got 100 million people on it, and it's 50 seconds. So I would check out what you really get. Ring is a very good unit. This is not unique just to Ring, but if you're going to connect up to the Internet of Things, which I'm in favor of, and have those conveniences in my life as well, make sure you know where that signal goes and who can watch it, at least on what continent they're on. And yes, you can install it and all that. Josh, you have any experience with the Ring?
Oh yeah, I've been using the Ring since they hit the market, and I've used them in many different applications, not necessarily for a doorbell. But yeah, everything you need is in the box. You're going to open up a booklet; it's going to look a little daunting, but just take a breath, read through it, and it makes a lot of sense. And anybody who has a smartphone or deals a little bit with the internet. You know, so if you're giving it as a gift or to someone else, like you mentioned, yeah, they should be able to get through it pretty easily. And really, it comes down to probably just a couple screws, you know, in a good mounting location. That's all it needs. And it comes off to replace batteries and things like that. So,
yeah.
Hey, so it's battery operated. It doesn't attach to your regular doorbell.
No, it's a freestanding unit. I've mounted them to trees, fence posts, and you use them as a driveway sensor. I mean, there's you know, out of the box kind of thinking of how to use these things. But yeah, you can put them almost wherever you want. Some people don't even bother having a normal wired doorbell anymore, and they just go with the Ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, just want to think. I mean, you're happy with what you got. What is that model? Do you know the model number or anything I should get? Because I don't know anybody that I'm shocked at. Nobody's got one of these things. But apparently some people have got them, because I've seen everything on the news and all these other shows, and I just can't find anybody that's got one that I can get information from. But
get the latest edition.
Yeah.
Don't buy yesterday's technology, because the newer editions sync up and connect up with Alexa and HomeKit and Apple, all of the other services that connect to and through your phone. So don't buy, you know, if you're going, go to the top and go to the current.
Okay. All right. Big money, huh? Well, it's a good thing I love them.
Yeah, if you're playing with power, you're into big money. That ship already sailed, buddy. It's just how many zeros are behind that one.
Yeah, I heard that. All right, sir. Thank you much.
All right. Take care, John. Bye now. And, Josh, I find that very fascinating that, you know, I mean, it's intoxicating as it sounds like you are into it. I mean, once you start playing with those things, the conveniences, then, you know, my gosh, it's nice. I forgot to close the garage door. So what? Pull out your phone, close it now.
Oh, yeah. We think of the holidays and we watched the Home Alone, and you know, you see the scene where they're trying to think of what they forgot, and they're like, oh man, I left the garage door open. Well, nowadays that's not an issue.
Yeah.
All the whole list of things they went through, you can deal with a smartphone app to resolve that. Left the coffee maker on. Done.
Yeah.
You know, swipe.
and my point about security is not that you do or do not according to doing these things. You just make sure you're aware that camera, that audio, you are potentially out in the public arena, and you behave accordingly because the FBI used to call these bugs.
Yeah, it's
now we install them ourselves.
It's not about probably being in the public arena; it's actually being in the public arena, someone will find and exploit weaknesses. But that's the nice thing about Ring is they're constantly coming out with newer models. You know, the models that I installed, you know, 3-4 years ago are completely different than what's out on the shelves right now.
Thankfully.
And, yeah. And they're doing a lot to make it better because they want to keep their consumers happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the timers, you know, I have lights that used to be on timers. You know, now that's all set with a time on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
On and off and on and off. And then, you know, my wife's, well, how do I turn the light off when it automatically comes on? It's like, well, get on your phone. Really?
And
yeah, really.
Just be mindful. You get used to certain ways, and you forget that there's even a switch on the walls. Like the lights go off, and you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
Like I can't get it to work. Just go flip a switch.
Yeah,
well, it still work.
Let's see what's cooking here. Do we have time for Doug? Let's get in with Doug. Hey, brother, how you doing there? Scott and Josh, how can we help?
Hey, fellas. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if you could help me here. You know, I moved to town here probably about 8 or 9 years ago. Bought one of those nice little old Tudors in Webster Groves, about a 1927-year-old house. And, you know, there's never a shortage of challenges around this thing. I've got a leak that's coming in above the family room fireplace mantle and closer to where the ceiling hits the wall there. And I really have a hard time tracking down where the water comes from. So, you know, at one point, you know, it's got a slate roof on it, and there's a small slate roof that's adjacent to the side of the house there, where the chimney is. And I replaced the flashing with new copper flashing. That seemed like it helped a little bit, but then it didn't. And I guess I'm at a loss. I don't even know how to track this thing down or find someone to help me track it down.
Can you describe what the leak looks like? Is it just plaster blistering?
Yeah. Yes, sir. That's exactly what it is.
Yep. Here's my answer. You won't stop it.
Okay.
And it's not a leak. Keep in mind, brick absorbs water. Gravity moves moisture down. Even in the brick, it moves it down. So your brick gets wet, your stucco gets wet, and wet or energy move from high concentration to low. Well, your house is drier than the outside, and your house is drier than the brick. So that moisture is moving, trying to dry itself out of the brick, and it migrates. So you've got condensation where you've got the attic cold air inside being warm and moist. So you can either have condensation right at that point where the plaster touches the brick, stone, whatever masonry. But you also have the masonry itself perspiring and trying to dry itself, number two. The only way I've gotten close to really fixing this is pulling the framing away, so the roof or ceiling wood that holds up your plaster, bringing that back an inch away from the stone and putting a thermal break, which is a styrofoam spacer in there, so that the plaster never touched that, quote, wet brick, if you will. And it's a nice, because you can't, you know, the brick's going to do what it's going to do as long as you're in St. Louis. Now, if you're out in Phoenix where it's, you know, 12% relative humidity, don't worry about it. It won't, you know, it's dry everywhere. But here,
right,
your house is warmer and drier on the inside than it is on the outside in the winter. And then the other way around in the summer, you don't care because the moisture is going up into the attic instead of in your house.
Yes. And so, yeah, my fix has been replaster it when it gets bad, and then it comes back. And then it is accelerated when there's storms and rain, but I think that would make sense from what you're describing to me.
Yeah, you can fix this, but it's 10 pounds of money for a 1 pound fix, so that's, you're better off just replastering a thing for 1 pound, 1 pound, 1 pound.
Yep. Well, that's kind of what I was afraid of, but I'm glad I heard it from an expert.
Yep.
Well, there's a handful of things that you can also look at. I mean, you mentioned the roof and the flashing and all that. That's great. Take a look at your tuck pointing, because when the mortar between the bricks starts softening up, it gets more receptive to moisture. And if that's if that's connected to a wood burning or a fireplace, make sure that it has a good chimney cap on it. Yeah. If it's not being used as a fireplace, make sure that you have your flue liner is intact. And just make sure that you're trying to manage the moisture as best you can from the outside sources, because it's going to find its way in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I could tell you that in the Tudor houses, there's those battens that run vertically, where it comes. And sometimes I'm wondering, well, maybe if I got up there and caulked alongside the battens, and there's also a window that's above there that might need the attention, that kind of stuff. And maybe that's what you're saying. Maybe look at that and try to see if I could do some better waterproofing around there.
Yeah. If you can't stop the moisture, what you want to try and do is limit how much gets into that chimney, like Josh is saying, and those are methods to lessen the amount of moisture that tries to come to your house.
Okay, very good.
All right,
thank you very much.
Good luck. You're playing a big game.
All right, thanks, sir.
All right, bye now. All right, Scott and Josh here at your service on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, despite everybody's best efforts, I'm still around here. Last man standing, KMOX Home Improvement, Scott Mosby, Josh Dunlap at your service. Next up, let's see my buddy Jim. Hey, Jim, good morning. How you doing?
Good, thank you. I had a problem. I enclosed a jacuzzi in a room with French doors and windows, and the condensate was so bad, I figured it would eventually ruin those windows.
Yep.
And a gentleman at the parts place suggested I put the exhaust fan in it with a humidity control switch, and it totally controlled the condensation there.
Yeah. As well, it depends where it depends on the relative humidity of the replacement air. So if you're pulling in dry air and getting rid of wet air, that's one thing, but previously with the garage issue, you'd pull in wet air and get rid of wet air. So I love your solution, and indoor swimming pools are a big deal from humidity.
Yeah, it worked for me, but of course that was in Las Vegas.
Well, Las Vegas, the relative humidity is about 17%. You're bringing in really dry air.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it might be a long duck. We could get a big long duck work from Las Vegas halfway across the country into the garage and, suck in the dry air, blow out the wet stuff. What do you think?
Yeah.
Sign right here, please.
Another thing, too, I found a product out there. I had a warehouse that had that block tar stuff underneath old tile.
Yeah.
And I realized after I cleaned it that it had asbestos, but that's another story. But anyway, I found a product that is citrus based, non-toxic, and I poured on there and it would loosen it up that I could crawl and scrape it up.
Really?
But I believe that works on tar.
Was that like something orange or whatever it was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of those products.
Oh, wow.
Now, I found it in Belleville when I moved here. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, all the best or all in the best, something hardware stores.
Okay.
But they closed. But it's a phenomenal product.
All right. There you go, Melanie. There's hope for you, according to Jim here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, brother. All right. Happy New Year, Jim.
Bye.
All right.
Thank you.
And there you go. I mean, I have never messed with the new solvents because I'm using, generally carcinogenic explosive solvents. Maybe that explains a lot.
Touching back on Melanie's thing and what Jim just mentioned, it's like you can try all sorts of different things. Orange peel is a name that I know.
Yeah.
It's an organic solvent.
That's a citrus-based product.
Citrus-based, so that you can clean it up with water. But it's a mixed bag in terms of the results. You might get all the stuff, but you might have a stain. And with something on the front of your house or on the outside of your house, it's not going to look great. And it may sometimes even look worse. So, but thanks for calling Jim. That was,
yeah. Yeah. You know, but it's a good point. I mean, the reference is it was in a warehouse. So, I mean, he got pretty, you know, I mean, pretty good is pretty good on a warehouse. But on the front definitely. Of the home residentially where you're sitting and relaxing, you know, maybe not. Yeah, yeah. Good point. That orange peel, it's called, Josh?
That's one of the brands that I had come across with that was a, kind of almost industrial grade of that citrus-based cleaner. But, yeah, you can do a Googles for citrus-based. A stripper or something like that might help to remove some of that stuff.
Wow. Well, it's a beautiful day out there today. Stay tuned. We've got hour two coming up here on KMOX. A fun day on University of KMOX. Coming up after this show, we go to the Rick Adelman Show. 3 o'clock, the business of family business. Ryan Recker is part of that as well. And then 4 p.m., Fred Brodimer brings us Health Matters by SSM Health. And then 5 p.m., we have the auto show back with Mr. Greg Damon. And then tonight, we go into the Blues. Yeah, so 7 p.m., St. Louis Blues, New York Islanders. We've got pregame and all sorts of other goodies here on KMOX. Stay tuned. Josh Dunlap, Scott Mosby at your service right here on KMOX.
Now, KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, hour two, home improvement, KMOX. Josh Dunlap here with us, and Scott Mosby, we are truly at your service. Both of us day job our lives at Mosby Building Arts, architects and home remodelers. We're in our, 72nd year. Something like that? Oh, my goodness. I'm not that old. I'm not that smart. However, there's a brain trust of people that have all that experience. Josh is here bringing this to you. And frankly, that's the fun part of this radio show is helping people, bringing what I know, trying to help people stay out of the mud like I did. I mean, I'm your pre-disastered R&D department. You know, I've made so many mistakes. I've really kind of left just the right answers ahead for you to experience. If you just call us at 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Now, Josh is a little smarter than me. He's learned how to pick up experience from others and try and not step in the bucket quite as much as I did. So I consider him, a little smarter than me. There. Josh, thanks for staying with us.
Oh, not a problem at all.
What did you bring for lunch? It's lunchtime here on KMOX. Did you bring, what's that barbecue bit over there? What, you're serious?
I'm grilling me some hot dogs.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. All right. Well, come on down to KMOX. We've got some mustard, ketchup, a little bit of relish. I'll run out and get some relish. We'll have some dogs on the barbie here any minute.
Yeah, nice 60-degree day. Time to break out the barbecue.
Oh, did you hear that on Monday after the rain, 64 and sunny?
Yeah.
Oy. Holy smokes. Wow. Sunscreen is going on sale down at the corner. No, not really. It's 2019, so much to talk about. We have phone lines, and Josh and I really almost have our medications adjusted. They've let us out on outpatient programs here, so we're out and about. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. Anyway, our day job is Mosby Building Arts, and we just like stuff. This is, frankly, you're seeing kind of an example. Josh loves this stuff, and he can bring some help to you as well as he has to me. I get most of it right, but two heads are better than one. So we offer this to you here on KMOX, 436-7900, 314-436-7900, and toll free, 800-925-1120. I'm going home to go outside somewhere. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm getting out there with it. My goodness. How about you? Any big plans, Josh?
Oh, not for, I think I'm going to do some raking the leaves just to get out there and air the house out. And
do the St. Louis thing on a good day.
Yeah, do the St. Louis thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? We've got some good callers. Let's just go right to the phones, get them fired up, and see what we can figure out here. Let's start with Don. Hey, Don, good afternoon. Welcome to lunch on KMOX, my friend. How can we help?
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking the call. And yes, this is a great day to take down those Christmas lights.
Oh, yeah.
They're gone.
Oh,
don't
really?
Forget.
You have them gone already?
Absolutely.
Oh, Don, you're the man.
Because then tomorrow I'm going to mow the leaves in the yard, so it looks a little better.
Oh, you're going to, you'll feel good by about, you'll be sore, but you'll be proud.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Now, my question, problem, or direction here is, I moved into a ranch home in June of last year, and everything is fine until the fall comes and we turn on the furnace, and then in the basement where the sewer lines are at, in between both of the pipes for the toilet is then the up pipe for the vent, and right there it drips condensation. It's always clear. It's about, I'd say, 4 ounces a day that it does, so we've got a bucket there. The house does have a humidifier, and it's set to 35%. Do you think I need to go up into the attic and see if there's any cold air that might be cascading down around that and causing that?
Where is this, close to the ceiling line on the main floor, or are you talking about the basement on this ranch? Where this
the
condensation
basement on the ranch is where it's... Yes.
So you're talking about the cold air coming 15 feet from the roof down through the attic, through the main floor, and still being cold enough to condense there. I mean, it could be condensation that's come. I hear what you're saying, but are you sure it's condensation?
That's a pretty long drive. Yeah,
yeah, man. Yeah.
Well, it's clear. Yeah. I didn't taste it, but it looks clear.
That's a good
thing.
There's
no odor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you flush some peppermint extract down some drain close to there and see if there is a break in that stack? Because peppermint is such foreign on the smell, but it's a very pungent smell. If you have any kind of a break in that stack, you'll smell peppermint extract. If you can dump it in from the roof, you can flush it down the toilet from the main floor, whatever it is, just once. And see if you smell peppermint down in the basement. If you do smell that peppermint, you will have some sort of a break or crack in that stack. Is this cast iron?
Yeah. See this? No, it's plastic. And
plastic. Okay.
You came up with the simple idea to troubleshoot. What a great idea! Rather than replace the light bulbs in the car and trade it away, do something simple. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to take credit for that. That was one of the callers probably 15 years ago.
I'm glad you brought that back. Wonderful, simple idea.
Yeah, yeah. Give it a try. Now, it could be condensation as well, but if that's the case, then, Don, get a humidistat, a hygrometer, just something that measures the humidity down in the basement. Your basement still should be below 55% relative humidity in the winter. And if it's higher than that, you may have condensation, and you just may have, you know, either raise the temperature of the basement to get rid of this, to raise the 2 point, or you lower the percent humidity. And if you've just got a really wet basement from humidity, you know, you may need a dehumidifier, run a dehumidifier in the basement.
Possibly. I don't see any condensation on the concrete walls or the floor where it's just concrete. The area where it's dripping, it actually has tile. Everything seems clear.
Yeah.
The windows in the basement are clear. There's no condensation on the windows upstairs.
Yeah. Well, it's the measurement down there at the stack, because your stack will get colder as a surface than anything other than your glass on your main floor. So I think you've got this dialed pretty well. But just to be safe, I'd do that peppermint thing and just make yourself feel better.
I'd like to do it simple rather than have to dig around in the insulation.
Oh, it'll cost you.
I always love doing.
Cost you a dollar and a trip to the grocery store.
That is true. That's on my way home. I think I'll do that.
Okay, Don. Good luck.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye now. Anything to add to that, Mr. Josh?
No, I like the peppermint solution, because then you get a sensory response. You can smell something without having to taste it.
Boy, howdy. You really do. Peppermint is unmistakable.
Yeah. I've used dyes in the past. You can go to a plumbing supply house and get some environmentally friendly fluorescent dyes that can help do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's an elegant and inexpensive solution.
Well, the way I learned that, I was smoke bombing. You know, I'm describing, you know, get a smoke bomb and, you know, set it off and all this. And I guess a plumber called years ago and he says, you know, here's a trick I learned from my dad, you know, 100 years ago. You know, it was peppermint extract from the grocery store, the cheap stuff. And it's like, wow. And I've done that so many times. It's effective, cheap, and by golly, you know, and it smells good.
It does.
You know, better than sewer gas.
That's exactly right. I'd rather take a hit of the peppermint than the sewer gas.
All right, Josh and Scott, back for more after this. Thanks for being part of the University of Camwex and the family of Camwex.
St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1120 KMOX. Depend on it.
That music brought to you by Josh Dunlap. He's quite a harmonica player. Thanks, Josh. No, he didn't used to play with Supertramp, but anyway, I love the harmonica. I don't know, I just do. Anyway, are you a harmonica
guy? It's a wonderful instrument.
Yeah? Anybody can play it, just not well. All right, let's get back to the phone lines, wire them up. We've got Bosco pumping out 50,000 watts. Let's talk to Bob. Hey, Bob, welcome. Good afternoon on CamWex. How can we help?
Hi there. I have a popcorn ceiling that was probably put in 1982. I'm not sure if it's been painted or not, but I got a bid to take it down, and it was just cost prohibitive, so I'm going to have to try to paint it.
Okay.
Any tips?
Yes, a very stiff nap roller or a thick nap roller. Do you know what I'm talking about, NAP, on the thickness of the...
Yeah. I have a choice of 3/4 inch or 1 1/4.
Ooh, I don't know. 1 1/4 is pretty big. I'm thinking 3/4.
The 3/4 usually gets it done.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The other question is, if it's not been painted before, would spraying it be a better choice?
Yes, it was originally sprayed on the first time, but I don't know that you can get enough of material buildup. Spraying's a big deal for a do-it-yourselfer because you can personally, I would roll it.
Okay.
Josh, you too?
Yeah, you're going to, that roller's going to grab a hold of some of that popcorn every here and there, and you know, so get a lot of those rollers and switch them out.
Yeah.
But getting a good even coat on there is going to be your best bet, and it's going to take a lot more paint than you think. So, the square foot calculations on the can are based on flat surfaces, so sometimes you almost need to double, sometimes triple that when you're dealing with popcorn.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen where some people have recommended thinning the paint a bit. Do you think that's a good idea?
I would maybe on the first coat, on your primer coat, but not. It won't hurt, but I've not done it. I've painted it typically right out of the can.
You're talking about putting the primer on first?
I would because, like you're saying, if it's only been sprayed and never painted, in 1982, I bet it's been painted.
Well, I'm betting that it's been painted, and if it is, then you don't think I would need a primer.
No, I would go with a good quality latex, though. You know,
okay.
Josh, any tips there?
No, a primer is a useful tool because it has a lot more solids in it, so it fills gaps and all the little nooks and crannies and make your paint do less work.
Yeah.
But you know, a good high quality paint can, and they've got multiple formulations now where you've got integrated primer. So
I would count on two coats too. I would not expect
absolutely.
Yeah.
We have more than one room, so we can experiment a little bit.
Oh, nice.
See what works better.
Or try a closet first too.
Yes, that's our plan.
Yeah. Oh, you're in good shape.
Closet, laundry room.
Now, there is another way instead of removing that popcorn. Typically, it's so labor-intensive, we will scrape the popcorn off the ceiling and then relaminate new drywall over it.
Yeah, well, this is attached to a concrete ceiling, so that's why it's popcorned.
Are you sure this is after 1978?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, the building was built in, it's a condominium, it was built in 1982.
Perfect.
And 83, so yeah, it's not asbestos.
Right on. That's exactly where we're going with that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Good luck, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Let's go. Bye now.
You know, another thing is I tend to wear goggles when I'm painting with that much stuff above me. So I'll wear a head sock, and I'll actually wear goggles, and I'll have a damp sponge and clean water to clean my goggles, because when you're messing around with that much volume, it's inevitable the blobs and the gobs, and, you know, they hit the floor on the drop cloth, and that's why we use fabric canvas drop cloths, because, you know, in the plastic, that stuff sits there wet. As soon as you step on it 10 minutes later, you track it throughout everywhere. So that's why the canvas drop cloths instead of plastic.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Anyway. I wear a wide-brimmed hat, too, because you end up getting just frosted with that fine mist that comes off. The roller slings a little bit around, and spraying, it just atomizes it and all throughout the whole room, and yeah. Everything gets coated.
Yeah. Have you ever messed with an airless sprayer? I enjoy those airless sprayers.
The Graco's and the ones, the professional grade ones, that they're a little bit of a hassle to set up and clean and all that, but once you get going, that's a great way to apply paint. Yeah. And if you have someone else behind you following you with a roller, then you don't see the flash marks. You can even everything out.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're great.
All right, Josh, let's see what's cooking up here with John. Hey, John, Scott, how can we help you? Scott and Josh.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
You've talked about this before, but I simply have forgotten. There's a ratio for using Red X in your drains when you don't have a septic. So I just have normal sewers, but
yep.
You've talked about using that's a great preventative. And would you mind giving that ratio out again?
John, I just describe it as making chocolate milk out of a powder. So I just take a tablespoon of powder and put it into about 20 ounces of warm water. So it's really just like taking Hershey's powder and putting it into white milk to make chocolate milk. All I'm trying to do is have that water carry this Ridex product into the pipes and stay in the pipes and not flush all the way out into the septic tank. That's or the, you know, or MSD. And MSD uses the same products down in their, you know, treatment tanks anyway. So this stuff is all inbounds environmentally. So it's not a problem.
Right. Now, does this do a pretty good job of taking care of, you know, just keeping your pipes generally clean? Right.
Yes, this is preventive. This is not unblocking a pipe.
Right,
once the
right,
pipe's blocked,
right.
It's too late. You need to go nuclear with a plumber and all the stuff. But once that plumber's done, there's still a residue, and that's when you start. On that one, I would do, once if I had a block, then I'd start with the Ridex at least once a month for a year.
Gotcha.
And for
perfect.
Me,
thank
I mean,
you
call me on this, it's like, man, that's something I need to do. It's probably been 6 or 7 months since I put Red X down my house. So imagine me, I'll be doing that early morning tomorrow morning. So I'll be.
Now, do you do it at night or just it doesn't, do you let it sit overnight or it doesn't matter?
Well, if I'm going to be gone for the day, it doesn't matter. But I prefer the night because then nobody typically uses the plumbing. But if I'm gone all day, then I'll just dump it and leave. And I just want the stuff to grow and stay in the pipes without getting flushed out to MSD.
Gotcha. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay, John, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye now.
Thanks, guys.
All right. And let's see if we can go right to Larry here, seems to have a Ridex question. Larry, Scott Mosby and Josh, how can we help?
Well, I almost hung up because the gentleman before me asked the question I was going to ask because I wrote it down. I stored it away very comfortably. I knew I could get at it. I can't find it.
Oh, it's one tablespoon for about 20 ounces. And
that's only part of the question.
Okay.
The other part is you told me that a couple of years ago, and I want you to know I haven't had a blocked drain on either of my two bathroom sinks since.
Nice.
It's been cleaned. But I discovered something the day after Christmas that I really should have thought of that I didn't. And it cost me $300 to find out.
Ouch.
That I should be putting that Ridex in also my other drains. Especially my kitchen sink drain.
Oh, amen. That's the one that matters first.
I never did it. I never thought about it because I never had a problem.
Oh, the grease in the kitchen is that. Ridex loves eating grease. I mean, it just loves organic waste and greases, you know.
Well, it's going to have a bunch to do. But my question is, if I mix it up, now that's I'm talking now about adding a lot of drains.
Okay.
If I mix, for argument's sake, a gallon of the Ridex with water,
uh-huh,
ready to go, how long is the Ridex active, or do I have to use it right after I mix it?
Oh, I would use it pretty quickly after you mix it because things grow in there. I mean, basically, Ridex is an enzyme for growing digestive critters. So you don't want to mix that up and leave it inside the house. You'll have worms crawling around your house. That's the whole idea, is getting something inside these pipes, eating all the waste. So and we had a previous caller about a year ago. He said, you know what? He said, I had all kinds of things crawling out of my Ridex box from years ago. I'd opened it up. So he advocated, make sure you put it in a tight Ziploc bag because of the critters with the humidity in St. Louis and that dry Ridex powder. He was adamant. It's like, don't let that stuff go. So my advice to you based on his experience was, yeah, mix it up, dump it. I mean, it's cheap stuff, you know, just dump it in the drains and come back and do it again later.
It's phenomenal. But what I did is I put mine in a large jar with a tight cover on it.
Okay.
So same thing. But it works. It really does. And I thank you many, many times over for that information.
All right, Larry. Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
All right. Bye now. And for those of you, Ridex is a septic tank treatment. That when, for number one, you can't dump bleach down a septic tank. It kills everything, including the digestive, whatever it is, molecule critters that digest and break down the waste. For example, a honey dipper or a septic tank pump, they'll pump the septic tank and then they leave a certain amount in the bottom of the tank so that the digestive element, a bacteria in that tank remains, and then you start filling it back up with the waste. That bacteria is what, you know, digests food in our stomachs, does the same in the tank. All this Ridex stuff is makes the bacteria really happy. So anyway, all you never wanted to know about Ridex, Josh, got anyway, huh?
Hey, it's the preventative stuff I really get excited about because that goes into making sure that your house is going to operate to the best that it can for you, because nobody wants to have problems. And, you know, a few bucks here and there, you know, a little preventative maintenance, and you can go 8, 9, 10 years without ever having a trouble.
Yeah.
And that's good news to hear that.
Ounce of prevention beats a pound of cure.
Absolutely, every time.
Right here on Camo X, back for more.
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right. The way of the world in getting things built, you can either start building, you can draw the plans first, or you can draw the plans or maybe do some selection. The point is, a game plan for every project is important, whether you're building a doghouse, you're remodeling the bathroom, finishing your basement. Keep in mind that plans come in many forms, but when you have multiple people, as in plumber, electrician, framer, drywall, painter, flooring, all of those various trades, when you have a team to build a larger job, the bigger that team is, the more involved and important the plans are. And those plans have to be drawn up in the language of those tradespeople. So I'm just advocating architects, blueprints, the whole thing. That's important. If you hear that throughout the answers here, the real, you know, just to crude it down a little bit, it's ready, aim, fire, or ready, fire, aim. I oftentimes describe a good design, good plan, good prepared project, bought out months ahead, all that stuff, as studying for a test. If you're going to spend the time one way or the other, if you don't study, you take the test, it's a real problem, and then you anguish over the poor results later. Well, that's the same as not planning a construction project. But if you do your homework up first and you study for the test, as in ordering, selecting, picking your colors, making sure the wall colors match the floor grout of the tile matches the carpet, on and on and on. That is a fully prepared project, and that's what I, at least, and Josh as well, we consider a well-designed project is in the language of that construction community. This radio show is filled up with all kinds of stories when that doesn't happen. So anyway, Josh, anything you can add to that? I mean, you're right in the fire every day.
Oh yeah. I would say the one thing to keep in mind is, you know, DIY can be exciting. It can be extremely rewarding, and especially when you get to look back and say that, you know, I accomplished whatever that is that you accomplished. Yeah. But at the same time, know your limits. You plumbing and electric, there's a reason why those guys are certified professionals. That's generally not something that homeowners should be getting involved with. But, you know, there are some projects that involve those things that you can do. But seek the guidance of professionals when it's appropriate. There are lots of people out there, just like us on the show, you know, who are really, truly willing to help you out and see that you do a good thing. Because we don't want anybody to be in a bad situation or to put themselves in a hazardous situation.
Yeah, it's, you know, anyway. If you want to know what Josh and I are all about, it's really preparing a project before it goes to the construction point. And that's kind of that's who and what Mosby Building Arts is.
Yep.
Let's go see my friend at Annette. Hey, Annette, Scott and Josh here. How can we help?
Okay. We're the ones that had the question. We own like a one-story ranch house that was built like in 69 or 70.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't have trusses. It has rafters.
Okay.
And when that house was built, they built everything kind of boxy. We want to open up the interior of the house.
Okay.
And I was thinking we need to shore up the rafters up there before we start taking any walls down or anything.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't make my point any more than what Josh and I were just speaking about. Very important to know what walls are load-bearing, what is not. Because even if they're not load-bearing, and in a conventionally framed house, stick-built as we call the attic, if the house is stick-built, the good news is carpenters put it together, they can take it apart. However, on a stick-built home, there are more generally load-bearing walls in a stick-built home than there is otherwise.
How do you tell a load-bearing wall?
Load-bearing wall, typically we start in the basement. Go down in the basement if you've got one and look for the beam.
Yeah.
And the roof size. So if it's a, you know what a gable roof is with two slopes, just goes up and back down?
Gable.
Gable, sorry. Gable roof.
Mm-hmm.
The front wall and the back wall are load-bearing, and generally the center is over the beam.
Okay, yeah.
So you've got three load. Now, occasionally you get other things going other directions, so that load-bearing wall can actually turn right angle. So you just need to know that. That's exactly what Josh does, is he goes through houses looking for trouble, and if he suspects something, we'll bring in an engineer or architect behind to confirm that, yeah, this thing is that way. Or we crawl up in the attic and figure it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you're playing with fire. Be careful there.
Yeah, it's very attractive right now to have an open floor plan. It's very popular. But you have to understand that the house is like a structure, and the walls help hold up the roof. And when the roof gets loaded up with snow, it pushes down, and it wants to push the walls out. So you're dealing with not just a vertical load, but a horizontal load as well. So that stuff's under tension. So you'll see things like collar ties and the ceiling rafters. Or ceiling joists are holding the walls, everything in position. So when you make modifications, you need to be mindful of how everything's connected, and it's not just a matter of willy-nilly just cutting things out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess the best thing to do would be hire an architect to design this.
Oh, yeah. If you're pulling walls out, by golly, here's the bottom line. Let's pretend you don't. So you don't get a plan, and you do remodel it. Nothing falls down. You go to sell the house 8 years from now. They go back in the records, and they see that there was no permit pulled.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Well, they know somebody did. And when it's structurally changed dramatically, they'll require you to go get a permit. Well, nobody's going to go get a permit on somebody else's DIY work. So you're playing with fire. And if there is an occurrence, a problem or a loss, and you didn't have plans and design and permits, your homeowner's insurance can deny coverage of that occurrence because you didn't follow the rules. They don't have to cover.
Okay.
I guess what we're struggling with is, who do we talk to first? Do we go to an architect? Do we have someone come in and who has a checklist who recommends do this first, do that first? Or we're just really at a loss for what to, you know, who we contact first, interior designer, architect, carpenter.
Well, all those people are going to be part of the mix anyway. Josh, this is exactly what we do.
Yeah, we're a general contractor at heart, but we do take on a lot of different types of work. So I would look for a general contractor. And if you can find a general contractor like through the HBA, Home Builders Association, usually you can find somebody who's doing the best job that they possibly can. Because there's a lot of folks who are just working out of their truck and do good work, but maybe not be skilled enough to bring to bear everything that they need to, but they maybe have connections. But, you know, your first call, I think, would be to, you know, someone has a good understanding of general construction knowledge, like a general contractor. And then they can bring in an architect or specialized designers as needed, depending on what needs need to be served.
Yeah. And the difference between the architect and the general contractor is the general contractor can provide a price range pretty accurately. The architect can provide a great design, but dollars and cents isn't necessarily their first language. So some 70% of architect-drawn plans never get built because they're over budget.
Hmm. Okay. Oh, interesting.
Okay.
So that's why we're, not only are we those guys, but that's why we do it that way, because we want people to know what they're getting into. Because, you know, before you start the price, well, I don't want to do that. That's way more than I want to spend. Well, it's good to know for both parties at that point before you start drawing plans for $5,000, $10,000, or, you know, it's keep your powder dry for what you really want.
Uh-huh. Right. So how far from St. Louis are you willing to travel?
Generally, if you can hear our voice, we go there. You know, we're kind of guilty by the CamWax signal. So,
All right. We're out in Franklin County, so that'll work.
Yeah. And there are companies out there that can do this too. They're just harder to find because your density is less, but, you know, there are others that can, but they're just, that's exactly why we're built that way. Because frankly, we need, as the general or the overall responsible part, we need to get all those people on. You know, we need the architect, we need the cabinet designer, we need the countertop guys, you know. So we're going to talk to them anyway. You might as well at least start with a general budget to begin with.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now. Threw me for a loop. Annette was pretty baritone there for a while. It's like, anyway. Oh, well. We'll be back for more here on University of CamWax. Josh and Scott, at your service. Let's
go Blues! Hi, folks. Chris Kerber with you here. And tonight we've got Blues hockey on a Saturday night hockey night in St. Louis. It's the New York Islanders against your St. Louis Blues at Enterprise Center. The pregame show starts at 6:30. The puck drops at 7 right here on CamWax. Let's go Blues!
Welcome back to the Helitech Foundation Repair Home Improvement Show. Now, once again, here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, Home Improvement, KMOX, Josh Dunlap, Scott Mosby, at your service, talking about preparing and getting ready to do a proper project. Let's see what's cooking here. My goodness. Well, maybe, maybe not. We'll see what's happening. Josh, any big things? Do you have that the hot dogs ready on the grill yet?
I've moved over to hamburgers.
Oh, there you go. Okay, we're down here on Olive, and come see it. Or our Josh, you know, we'll share your address a little later. You just, you know, put a few shrimp on the Barbie, and we'll be there. All right. Let's go next up to Stephanie and see what's happening. Hey, Stephanie, Josh and Scott here. How can we help?
Hi. I'm having a problem with the two toilets in my home. They, as soon as I start to flush the toilet, it makes a loud noise, kind of a rubbing noise. And it only does it about every 10 flushes, but both toilets do it. And it seems to start when I start taking a laxative, of all things.
Does it seem like a vibration in the plumbing?
Yes.
Well, I don't think it's related to your laxative, frankly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you're out of harm's way in that regard. Now, if one toilet, probably when it shudders, the filler mechanism. But if it starts shuddering, and it can reverberate through the waste pipe and the supply pipe to where both toilets start, you know, sound, and frankly the sink. I mean, both bathrooms, if they're back to back, You know,
if one back.
Yeah, if one starts shuddering and making noise, you won't really be able to know exactly which bathroom originates it. So I think in the toilet you're flushing, you need to replace that filler mechanism, replace the guts in that toilet. I think the spring is a little tired to where it's not soundly shutting off the water flow. So when it's almost full, that flutter valve is kind of not quite securely shutting it off, and it can actually vibrate. And basically it's like a saxophone.
Oh.
So I would start there, and if it's not that, then start looking upline at the shutoffs, the spigot on the water supply side of that toilet and other toilets.
I should probably call a plumber to do this for me.
Yes, and if you're going to change the guts on one toilet, I'd have him do it on the other, because getting a trip charge in there, once you get them there,
right.
You know, have them do everything you can, you know, and that's just good management of a project. You'll spend more money, but it'll be a lot less than having him come 3 times over 3 years.
Yeah, did I say that it only happens about once every 10 flushes?
Yeah.
It doesn't happen every flush.
Well, next year it'll be every 5 flushes, and, you know,
oh,
you never know. It's on the way out. Yep.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Stephanie, good luck there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Next up, let's talk to my friend Joe. Hey, Joe, how can we help you here?
Oh, and Happy New Year, Scott and Josh
and
everybody out there.
Happy New Year.
I was wondering, you know, in order to get rid of some of all this excess plastic we got on the planet, that's why I was wondering if you could repurpose it, refashion it like rebarb, and instead of using the metal, use that as rebarb in concrete building. Would that be possible, or does it have to be metal?
It's possible, but plastic needs to have reinforcing in it. So if you have fiber-reinforced plastic, nylon is indeed that way. So, for example, building retaining walls, they're nylon keys or pins that are made out of a high quality. But with the ultraviolet light, plastic gets brittle. So old plastic isn't a good opportunity for, you know, putting in steel or concrete, unless it's from the very beginning.
Right. Well, I said usually, you know, they say you could put some additives in, like, say, carbon fibers or something like that. But that would probably help get rid of a lot of plastic. It'd be embedded in concrete anyway, right?
Yeah. I mean, plastic can be recycled for the most part.
Yeah, you can embed it in your walls as well. I've seen varying styles of manufactured studs, you know, especially on non-load bearing walls, where they literally take like diapers and plastic bags, extrude them through a thing that makes a stud, and
already doing that.
Yeah. It's used in varying degrees in areas where there's more receptive market for it.
Right.
But then it kind of goes. It
serves the same purpose, though, right, gentlemen?
Oh yeah, I've seen railroad ties and landscape ties made out of recycled plastic, and you got to look for them, but they're out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing the free knowledge with us, gentlemen.
You're
very welcome.
Take care, Joe.
Bye-bye.
And next up, let's see what's happening with my friend here, Jeff. Hey, Jeff, Scott and Josh here. We're rounding the bend here, almost done. How can we help you, my friend?
Hey, Scott. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Yeah.
I have some issues going on with my water system. I have a home that's 19 years old, and the way the water comes into my home is through a mana block system. Are you familiar with something like that?
Yep.
Okay. Well, the original mana block system went kaputs, and I had some plumbers come out in June, and they rebuilt my whole new system with all my lines. And I also had a water softener installed in my home at the time, brand new, to try to alleviate the hard water issue that I'm having with my showers and wash machine. And by doing this, it seemed to work at first, but I'm finding now that my wash machine on the cold water side, it's a brand new machine, that's why I had to replace it because of all the hard water issue. It builds up with calcium that looks like sand. I mean, the whole unit just fills up, and the guy came out to look at the machine and he said it was a water problem. So what I was wanting to find out, is there a possibility that I could put an inline filter coming in from the street before, after my shutoff valve and before maybe my new regulator, and try to trap some of the settlement coming into the home before it even goes into my system.
Absolutely. Whole house filtration systems are a great way to go. You can put them, some of them you can put on yourself, or a plumber can install right after the water comes into the house through the main, and you're pre-filtering everything that goes through the house. The one thing to be mindful of is that filter sees everything, so change it and change it often. Point of use possibility is you can you put a filter at where the appliance is or the fixture is, and then only filtering the water that you're actually using. You know, because you don't necessarily want to be filtering the water that you're using to like fill your pool or water your plants if that's coming through the house. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But you can absolutely help get some of the particulate out of the water. Calcium, unfortunately, is dissolved pretty finely and can get past some of those filters. So water softening plus filtration and all that in combination can you might want to look at other filters to pull out some more stuff and keep maybe finer filtration.
Yeah.
Right, because the water softener I thought would help, but it's not. And they did left my water, like, outside bibs on hard water. Still.
Jeff, I'm going to have to go. We've got 10 seconds left.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, and hopefully that'll work if I put an inline filter on.
All right, Jeff, good idea. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, Josh and Scott, Happy New Year, folks.